Welcome to Betrayal Trauma Recovery. I'm Anne. I'm happy to have Coach Ray here today. She is the coaching coordinator here at Betrayal Trauma Recovery, and she has a new topic-based group coming up called Relapse Preparedness, just in case. We're just going to jump right into this today, Ray. What is relapse preparedness, and what made you start thinking about this whole relapse preparedness thing?
So my vision for relapse preparedness kind of evolved from three separate ideas, which all just happened to collide at precisely the right time and space. So first, within my capacity as a coach, as well as just being a woman among other women recovering myself from sexual betrayal trauma, I hear on a daily basis this really deep fear and anxiety that women express about their concerns that their guys might relapse. In other words, that their partners will step away from recovery and healing, returning instead to their previous patterns of compulsive and secretive sexual behavior. So at a very basic level, I've always known that relapse is a topic of significant concern to us as women who are surviving and healing from sexual betrayal trauma. Secondly, because I work so closely with professionals who treat and support clients who are the sex addicts or porn addicts in the equation, I've begun to hear these professionals, and these are people I really admire and respect, talking about relapse prevention strategies. So ways that sex and porn addicts can structure their recovery plans to meaningfully minimize the likelihood of their return to compulsive sexual behavior. And honestly, as I was listening to these professionals address this legitimately loaded topic so passionately and so proactively with their sex addict and porn addict clients, I kind of felt left out of the party. I mean, I recognize that as partners of sex addicts, my clients and I, we can't do the footwork, right, involved in preventing a relapse. But the idea got me thinking that, you know, even if the job of preventing a relapse doesn't fall within our reach and responsibility, that doesn't mean that we need to sit back passively and leave our, you know, fate in the hands of the sex addicts or porn addicts with whom we share life. So that planted the seed for me to begin asking myself and my colleagues, if we can't actively prevent the pain and trauma of a possible relapse, what kind of protective and proactive actions can we take on our own behalf in the meantime? That brought me to this third awareness with this whole relapse preparedness idea, bringing it to the forefront for me. And this one goes back to 2013, so like just in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy. And at the time, I was working part-time as a freelance writer for various publications. And one of my clients hired me to write an article on emergency preparedness. So basically, encouraging families to plan and prepare for the worst case scenario, in that case, natural disasters, while simultaneously hoping and praying that those worst case scenarios would never become necessary. So my subtitle for that article was Just in Case. And so fast forward a few years, when I began to brainstorm ways that partners of sex and porn addicts can actually do something with these concerns about relapse, rather than just sitting and waiting for something that may or may not happen, I stumbled into this lovely, fantastic metaphor or point of comparison between these two otherwise unrelated, you know, unwanted experiences. And all of that is kind of how my passion for relapse preparedness was conceived and eventually born.
Awesome. So obviously, as you describe in the Covenant Eyes article, you've lived through the whole relapse experience, and it's something that you encounter with many of your coaching clients. So I bet a lot of our listeners know more about relapse than they'd like to, but for anyone listening who hasn't been through that, can you describe some of the feelings women commonly express in the aftermath of a relapse?
Like I said earlier, relapse is something that women tend to fear very deeply, and with good reason, because it's something that does happen. And when it happens, it brings with it a whole deluge of painful emotions. For women who choose to stay in their relationships after discovering their guy's compulsive sexual behavior, there is an incalculable amount of emotional risk involved. And when that emotional risk is met with ongoing incidents of sexual acting out, the wounds from a woman's initial discoveries often deepen and worsen and fundamentally destabilize her past, present, and future efforts toward betrayal trauma recovery. So I hear my clients describe this experience as ripping the scab off the wound. That's probably the one I hear most commonly by women facing relapse. Pulling the rug out from under me, stabbing me in the back, taking me for granted, betraying me with a kiss was one I heard one time that really stuck with me kind of profoundly and poignantly. Breaking my heart all over again. Another one that I hear more often than not is knocking me me back to square one. Like, this kind of thrusts us way back to where we were at the beginning. So through these and other expressions, women reflect their discouragement, their despair, their disappointment with this whole process of recovery in which they'd begun to place some degree of tentative, fragile, or courageous hope and faith. And beyond these expressions, which I'm guessing, you know, many of our listeners, as you said, have heard or even felt before, there's another really unique and singular aspect to relapse preparedness that I observe in my clients' emotional response to repetitive sexual betrayal. And that aspect is an internalized grief or self-doubt or self-indictment. We've all heard that saying, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. Mm-hmm. And that concept is really deeply and organically present for women who decide to try and salvage these traumatized relationships. So I often hear my clients say they feel stupid for believing that their guys might successfully change, or they often say that they feel pitiful and pathetic. Those are the two P words that I hear for choosing to stay and for hoping to experience healing rather than this recurrence of harm. So in the aftermath of a relapse, a client may feel like she somehow asked for this or allowed this to happen, or express the fear that she did something to trigger the relapse, or express regret over something she didn't do to support his recovery. So without a doubt, across the board, clients express an increase in their emotional distress and a decrease in their hope and faith in recovery, which makes sense, especially when their early attempts at healing within the relationship are seemingly invalidated by the sexual relapse and the betrayal trauma that accompanies it.
Yeah, for sure. For our listeners who are new to this relapse idea or the idea that this could happen again, what's the difference between a relapse and a slip? Does it matter what we call it? What if the husband and the wife are in a disagreement about definitions?
I'm one of these people for whom words really matter. And when I can define and articulate something, it's easier for me to process it, understand it, and make peace with the subject, whatever it is. So I'm going to give you like the standard traditional recovery world distinction between slips and relapses. And then I'm going to give you permission to scrap those distinctions and really redefine relapse in whatever ways serve you and help you come to terms with relapse preparedness. When addiction specialists use the term slip, they're often describing a one-time or a short-term lapse back toward compulsive sexual behavior. So a lapse that ends with some kind of swift and serious self-intervention. So when an addict slips, he generally gets his butt back on the wagon, you know, relatively quickly. And while that slip is considered a setback, it doesn't necessarily undo all of the positive recovery work that he's been doing to that point. So for sex addicts, for example, a slip might involve clicking on an inappropriate website, perhaps viewing something sexually explicit, then stopping himself before allowing that behavior to draw him back into this big vortex of chronic and compulsive sexual acting out. So by contrast, when addiction specialists use the term relapse, they're often referring to an extended period of sexual acting out. So one wherein the addict does not stop himself, engage his recovery tools, reach out for help to avoid getting sucked back into his pattern of compulsive sexual behavior. Relapse is often characterized by an addict's resistance to getting back on track, and it often involves an extended period of secrecy, some serious loss of sexual sobriety, an interruption in his detox from the neurochemical effects of sexual acting out. So relative to the work we do here at Betrayal Trauma Recovery, a relapse deeply damages an addict's efforts toward relational healing, holistic recovery, and certainly restitution for the harms he's inflicted upon his family. Now, with all of that said, when I coach women through relapse preparedness or through any aspect of sexual betrayal trauma, really, I like to remind my clients that labels are very personal, they're very purposeful, and they're very powerful. I also remind them that part of trauma resolution involves reclaiming our own independent sense of self-autonomy, which includes stating our own truths, even when those truths are different from how others perceive it. So what does all that have to do with the difference between a slip and a relapse? In my work with clients, it means empowering trauma survivors to label their guy's addiction and recovery-related behaviors using whichever definitions equip and inspire them to take meaningful, effective, and positive action on their own behalf. I've watched so many women struggle under this conversation wherein a guy says, ABC doesn't mean that I've relapsed. And she says, well, it certainly feels like a relapse to me. My best advice to women who feel trapped in that kind of merry-go-round conversation is to simply opt out of the argument, you know, step off that merry-go-round, and create for yourself your own working definitions for whichever behaviors impact you in a relevant way. You may need to get creative about how you communicate and converse with your guy when discussing these topics, but don't let that stop you from seeking and securing your own sense of clarity about it, because honestly, you don't need his permission to define a relapse that violates your boundaries, and you also don't need to apologize for it either.
Absolutely. When I realized that my husband, now ex-husband, was literally speeding down the track of relapse, he was not telling the truth, he was not taking accountability for his actions, I was horrified. I didn't have a plan at the time. So my world was just reeling. I would have been so much better off had I been more prepared. Looking back now, I wish I would have had a group like this to help me prepare. So for me, I had heard that relapse was part of recovery. So when I started seeing his relapse behaviors, I was very patient. I was very understanding because I thought, okay, relapse is part of recovery. But then as it started to get really out of control, I started getting really scared. Does that mean that relapse is unavoidable, that women should accept it? Tell me what your thoughts are about this relapse as part of recovery expectation.
So I'm going to be really straightforward and honest with you about this one. My experience lies in the field of recovery for women traumatized by the behaviors of porn and sex addicts. I desperately want to believe that relapse isn't unavoidable. So women needn't buy into the suggestion that relapse is going to happen despite their addict's most dedicated recovery work. But there's this really small, really loud voice that runs really deep inside of me that screams, absolutely not. Relapse is not a necessary part of addiction recovery. And at the same time, I recognize the limitations of my own training. And so I stand here with some humility enough to say, you know what, I'm not the most qualified to answer that particular question. So instead of pretending that I am, I'm going to throw myself into something I do know and something that I know that I can do. And that is helping women prepare for the possibility of a relapse if or when that day ultimately comes.
And that's super important. Now, that's easy for me to say because he did relapse. Hindsight is 20/20. What would you say to women who worry that preparing for a relapse is giving him permission to do it?
So for me, this one goes back to the concept of acceptance versus approval. In my work with women, I am very, very, very honest. And that's because I believe that most women have been lied to more than enough for one lifetime. And I refuse to participate in perpetrating even one more iota of deception-induced trauma in the women I'm privileged to know and coach. So as I reflect my clients' truth back to them in our coaching sessions, I encourage them to be equally gut-level honest with themselves and their loved ones. This often translates into accepting or even embracing a potential reality that makes our skin crawl. And rather than denying it and therefore resisting a reality that we wish wasn't true, when my clients and I talk about preparing for relapse, we're discussing an uneasy yet realistic threat to their hard-fought safety and stability. So in doing that, I assure these women that exploring this reality cannot and will not magically invite it to happen. On the contrary, by preparing to respond to a day she hopes will never arrive, my clients can actually stand even more firmly and confidently within their self-protective relational boundaries in ways that fully honor and emphasize their right to respond in healthy ways to unhealthy behavior.
I really like that. So as women are considering joining this group, are there mistakes women sometimes make when they are approaching the idea of relapse preparedness?
Yes and no. So I tend to think that any woman who even entertains the idea of relapse preparedness is ahead of the game. In other words, she's less likely to be caught off guard if or when that threat to her safety comes knocking at her door. That said, the women I know who do relapse preparedness most successfully avoid making some natural and understandable assumptions. So for example, relapse preparedness doesn't work if you expect the process to be one size fits all. In other words, Jane Doe's relapse preparedness plan won't adequately protect and serve Jenny Doe. Another example, relapse preparedness doesn't work if it only happens in your head. In order to effectively implement the plans you create for yourself, those plans need to exist somewhere you can tangibly reach them in the middle of a potential trauma response. Relapse preparedness doesn't work if it becomes a point of obsession and emotional overwhelm. In other words, relapse preparedness work should empower you to make your plan and tuck it away for the future. It shouldn't heighten your day-to-day anxiety into a constant, long-lasting, ever-present posture of imminent anticipation. Lastly, relapse preparedness won't protect and serve you from chronic or frequent or ongoing sexual betrayal. So this is easily the mistake I fear most on behalf of my clients. When I encounter women who are experiencing their guy's relapse on a daily or weekly or monthly basis, I encourage them to pursue a different form of betrayal trauma recovery care and coaching, one that focuses primarily on self-protective, emotional, physical, sexual, and relational boundaries.
The best way to be prepared for your relapse is to have a group that can support you to create your preparedness plan.
Oh, absolutely. Which is why I created this group, because I encountered in my day-to-day work, in my individual practice, in my other coaching groups, that this was something that women really wanted to talk about, but that honestly, they needed to be able to talk about it in a communal environment that was going to support them through the anxiety of it all.
Yeah, and a safe space, because I'm sure that many women listening to this right now are kind of worried because they think, well, what if this is triggering my trauma, right? Mm-hmm. What if talking about relapse makes things worse? What would you say to those women?
Mm-hmm. So my response to this one might surprise you, but honestly, if thinking about a relapse doesn't trigger your anxiety and trauma, number one, you'd definitely be in the minority. And number two, I'd be concerned about your vulnerability to denial or dissociation or disconnection from the impact of sexual betrayal trauma. So the good news is betrayal trauma recovery coaching is all about tools and resources. It's about empowering women to rally their resources to meet those triggers, anxiety, and trauma with skill, with self-awareness, with meaningful steps toward a recovery end game, which is, you know, that post-traumatic growth. Mm-hmm. So as I coach my clients through relapse preparedness, I offer them an entire spectrum of different support resources to increase their tolerance for having this specific discussion. So for example, in my relapse preparedness coaching group, I both open and close every two-hour session with a different exercise or meditation or activity, so that when our four-week process comes to a close, participants leave with at least 8 different ways to soothe their triggers about sexual relapse or about any other betrayal trauma topic for that matter.
Yeah, that's super important to be able to process those things. Also, have a group there to help you understand what your current situation might be. Maybe some women might come in and think that their husband's in recovery and perhaps they are experiencing chronic relapse, which is actually means their spouse isn't in recovery and they didn't know that before. So having a supportive community to be there while you explore these things is really important. Tell our listeners more about the relapse preparedness group. What will they get from the group that they wouldn't get from doing it on their own?
With this month-long support group, we will spend 8 total hours of live group coaching time with an exclusive focus on this topic of relapse preparedness. So as I said, we'll open each session with a healing meditation or emotional grounding technique. Then we'll segue into a short participant check-in just to get us all present and engaged within our group time and space. From there, I'll speak for about 10 to 20 minutes to introduce the primary focal point for each week's session. Each week's objective is different and it builds upon work from the previous week's session. During this section of our session, I share some personal experience with this topic, as well as some highlights, some insights, inspiration, encouragement, etc., and some lowlights like pitfalls, stumbling blocks, common challenges I've learned from coaching clients through their experiences of relapse preparedness or unpreparedness. At some point during each session, I pause and I give participants 5 to 10 minutes of private work time. So I basically invite you to reflect and record your own insights, questions, and challenges in the moment. Because in my experience, that is far more realistic and effective than asking or expecting you to do that after our group session ends and, you know, you go back to life with all of its busyness and distraction. So after that, we all come back together again to share those reflections. That's when we can request and receive and provide feedback on anything as needed and offer support for one another's individual work through our shared group processing. So again, we always close with another meditation or self-soothing exercise, along with an individual checkout and self-care commitment for the upcoming week. This is not work we do without lots and lots and lots of self-care. Before and between each session, I provide you with a collateral series of worksheets and journaling questions that are designed to structure and strategize your individual relapse preparedness plan. So the live coaching sessions are designed to provide context and comprehension and community support as you complete your plan with the help of those worksheets that I've created. I recommend participants set aside a minimum of 1 hour, maybe 3 hours maximum, depending on how much time you want to spend on it per week between the sessions. And that's just going to help you get the most out of the month-long support group itself. So in addition to those worksheets and those live coaching sessions, I also try to assign each participant a relapse preparedness planning partner. And this allows you and your partner to process together safely in a more private one-on-one relationship anything that comes up for you between our workshop sessions themselves. So some participants engage their partners quite actively while others don't. And that's ultimately up to you and your relapse preparedness partner. I do my best to pair women with similar needs, priorities, available time and schedules, etc. But bottom line, by the time we end this month-long support group, you'll leave with a comprehensive understanding of relapse preparedness in general. Tools to manage the fears, anxiety, and expectations that accompany this unique kind of internal and external work, a small circle of support from other women who've shared this workshop with you, and your very own detailed and individual relapse preparedness plan, something that you can file away maybe digitally or print and secure it in your own private space, like a hard copy, or share with others who comprise your personal support team, which may include your closest friends, your therapist, coach, counselor, etc.
I just want to emphasize that Coach Ray has 11 years experience with this, and she has created all of these materials herself. This is really a wonderful opportunity for women to experience something that is not available anywhere else. So those of you who are interested in this, you love the whole relapse preparedness concept, but you can't afford the workshop. Do you have any ideas for them, Coach Ray?
Absolutely. So first of all, by all means, read my article on Covenant Eyes that's entitled, How Can I Prepare for My Husband's Next Porn Relapse? I encourage you to raise the topic with your betrayal trauma survivor friends in your recovery or coaching groups or with your coach or with your therapist. In other words, begin the dialogue with other people you know who might be considering questions just like this. You'll probably find that as you begin initiating the conversation, others will respond accordingly. Finally, keep your eyes open for the monthly webinars we've been offering here at Betrayal Trauma Recovery, because I'm hoping to provide a condensed, you know, Cliff Notes version of this whole relapse preparedness workshop in a webinar form sometime in the future.
We have a wide and wonderful variety of listeners here at BTR, including women in different kinds of relationships and in various stages of their recovery from betrayal trauma. Coach Ray, who do you think would benefit most from relapse preparedness planning?
I recommend this group for anyone who is choosing, even if it's a one day at a time kind of choice, to stay in a relationship wounded by sexual betrayal trauma. So going back to that analogy of Hurricane Sandy and emergency preparedness, I encourage women to explore strategies that could and would equip them in the event of a relapse. And once that's done, women often find that their fear of relapse subsides significantly, and that ultimately frees them to enjoy the beauty and benefits of a hard-fought recovery. So I really recommend this workshop for women who feel that they may be in this for the long haul and who want to really move through and beyond the fears that may otherwise keep them stuck and keep them from really experiencing the benefits of long-term life in recovery.
So I know that you're a big fan of quotes, and you have a lot of amazing ones. So we're going to wrap up here. And in conclusion, do you have any quotes or little tidbits that you can leave for our listeners on this topic of relapse preparedness?
I most certainly do. I have three that I pulled here that are among my favorite on this topic. So one that I've always loved, like literally this was the quote that I put on my high school graduation announcements, says, a ship in harbor is safe, but that's not what ships are built for. I like to relate that to engaging in this process of relapse preparedness in the context of recovery. As long as we remain in that relative isolating safety of take no risks, we'll also remain separate from our greater purpose and potential within this world. Another quote that I like says this, a bird sitting upon a tree is never afraid of the branch breaking because her trust is not in the branch. Her trust is in her own wings.
That is so good.
Isn't it? And then here's my final one. This is one I just resurfaced, amazing quote by the Baal Shem Tov, who's a Jewish author, teacher, and philosopher. It says, "Let me fall if I must. The one I will become will catch me."
That
Pretty
is so
cool, isn't
good.
it?
You know, that, sorry, that bird quote really fast.
Yeah.
I just have to say, is better than most therapy sessions.
Right? Isn't that the value of a punchy little takeaway,
you know,
thing that'll stick in the back of your mind and you can really carry it with you in your pocket?
Yeah. I think that's amazing. Our coaches are so incredible. I am so grateful and honored to have you around every day when I work. I think I am so lucky to have caring and compassionate, educated, experienced, professional coaches who understand how to deal with this better than a majority of therapists, who really can help women to heal and to feel joy again in their lives. And I certainly feel like that now. For those of you who have been listening to this podcast for about a year now, I've been running it. You have seen me totally depressed and sad and happy in my ups and downs. And now I can tell you that through my recovery and through my interaction with APSATS coaches, that I feel peace a majority of the time now. I'm so grateful for this program that we created, because it's what women really need. It's not something for the addict that has been tweaked for the wife, right? It's not a program for the addict that the therapist said, "Oh, well, I don't have anything for the wife, so we'll just kind of change the questions a little bit and run her through it." No, no, no. From the foundation is for wives of addicts, and that in and of itself makes the biggest difference.
By trauma survivors, for trauma survivors.
Exactly. This group, Relapse Preparedness, just in case, is on the website now. Click on schedule and join to register. If this podcast was helpful to you, please rate it on iTunes. Each rating improves our visibility on search engines and helps women who are isolated find us. Also, this podcast is brought to you by your donations. Please go to btr.org/donate and donate today. Ray, thanks so much for taking the time to be here today.
Oh, Anne, thank you very much for asking me to. And I really look forward to seeing at least some of our BTR listeners joining me for the Relapse Preparedness Support Group coming up soon.
Me too. So until next time, stay safe out there.